Okay, so the tenth and 11th parakim deal with the topic of hafarat nedarim. Until now, in the 9th parak, we dealt with hatarat nedarim. Now we're talking about hafarat nedarim. There are two essential types of hafarat nedarim, that of the father and that of the husband, and then the intersection of the two is the central topic of our parak. That moment when the woman goes from being under her father's control to under her husband's control, which, for all intents and purposes, the major topic of our perek is not halacha lemaisa for us, because A, we do our weddings all together. You're aware that in halacha, there are a Jewish wedding, a Jewish marriage, is initiated in a two-step process. Kiddushin or erusin is often translated as betrothal, but it shouldn't be confused, of course, with what we call engagement. You hear somebody got engaged. Engagement today is a halachically meaningless circumstance, right? He says, "Will you marry me?" She says, "Yes." He gives her a ring or whatever the equivalent is, has only very minor halachic implications.
But that was, I mean, the original erusin or
kiddushin
had that, to a large degree, that same status.
It's true, except for the fact that from the moment of kiddushin or erusin, when he gives her a ring and says hariat mikudeshet li, or he gives her money, says hariat mikudeshet, we learned kiddushin 2 years ago. From that moment, she is an eshes ish, right? In other words, if they break the Kiddushin, the parallel to what happens, unfortunately, people break an engagement. You break an engagement, it's sad, you say, I'm sorry, it's like, you know, obviously involved in a certain amount of heartbreak, but there's no halachic nafkamina. That woman, the woman who broke an engagement, that girl who breaks an engagement, can go off and get married to anyone else. She's not an ishasish, she doesn't need a get, she doesn't, right? You just have to decide, what do you do with the engagement presents?
But you said it. Like you said, there is some degree of halachic significance to the engagement. And
in the poskim, they talk about like shilas about the returning the ring and if people laid out expenses, does the one who broke the but that's those but, are but all have, matters of dine mamonos.
You have, let's say, also the tanaim, which
the tanaim also is a dine mamonos.
But just like erusin was once a year before the wedding, and then it was moved up to, so there wouldn't be this weird
right.
status in between. The Tanaim also were a year before the wedding. They basically okay. serve what we call engagement today.
Okay.
And they were moved up also. Everything's moved up right up because no one wants.
Well, no, that's not true. Like now, like in the Haredi world, they do when they have a vort, you know, which is what we call an engagement party. So they sometimes sign the Tanoim, but the Tanoim, so first of all, the Tanoim have Bli Neder in every other line. And the Tanoim is just an agreement that the fathers agree that they're going to make a wedding at, like on the Shtar Tanoim, it says they're
going to
make a wedding at blank.
What's the point of doing right? 5 minutes before the chuppah?
What's the point of doing Tanoim today? So, first of all, a lot of people don't do Tanoim today.
It's still pretty common.
It's very common, but it's not. And if somebody gets married without a Tanoim, it's not like getting married without a ketubah. Why do people do Tanoim today? No, you just made a slew of weddings. You get two extra kibbutim. Three extra kibbutim because somebody reads it. And the mothers get to break the plate, which they love for some reason. So it's like the highlight of the wedding is the mothers break the plate. Now you see like they make these hammers. You see these very fancy hammers with like flowers and bows on them that says, you know, Siman Tov or Mazel Tov, right? And the mothers hold it and they crack the plate and they, right? It's like there's no end to it. But
they give out
the pieces. It's a skula. It's a, okay. But all of a tanoim today and a broken engagement, Rachamon Litzlan, which is of course better than a broken marriage, the only halachic matters that are relevant here are matters of dine mamonos. Money was laid out, and it's like a type of shutafut, right? Bahakama. Yeah, money is laid out, and now who's responsible for those expenses? You know, you break the wedding, you have to pay the caterer in any way, right? So
in the Tanaim today, it's completely problematic. People say, oh, the reason we don't get Tanaim early is because the woman would need a the get if you get.
No, that's not true. Absolutely not. You don't need a get if you break the tannoyim.
People have this.
No.
Crying something about
the kiddushin has a halachic reality where after the kiddushin, right, you're standing under the wedding. Today, in our days, when we do it all in one shot, right? So you're under the chuppah. He gives the ring. Hariat mikudeshetli. Mikudeshetli. La, 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 la. And then you read the ketubah. The whole point of reading the ketubah is that there should be a kind of palate cleansing between the kiddushin and the erusin. And Rachmana's lightning strikes and the chosin drops dead right there. She's an almona. She can't marry the Kohen Gadol. Right, or if at that moment she says, I changed my mind, or he says, I changed my mind, right? Which, it's like happened at least in a movie. So she needs us. She would need Yibum if he dropped it, and if he changed her mind, she needs a get. You need a get. She can't marry a Cohen, even though he never laid a finger on her. Right, so. So kiddushin has halachic reality. So nowadays that we do it all together, you do not have this circumstance of the in-between when she's an ashes ish, but she's still under her father's control. We also do not have the halacha lemaisa of our perek because our daughters do not get married at the age of 12.
But which point does she become the
ashes ish? From the point of kiddushin, she is an ashes ish. For the purposes of being under the control of her husband, she's usher to any other man. If she's with another man, she is like an adulterous woman. However, she is not fully under her husband's control. Now, let me just put in an asterisk here in the conversation by way of introduction to the whole perek. All of these things sound extremely misogynistic to us today. Right, so we can't stop at every line along the way and explain, either to apologize or to explain or to whatever. But all of these things are very foreign to us. They're very foreign to our reality. They're very foreign to our experience. They're very foreign to our sensibilities. But the halakha has a certain idea that a girl is under the control of her father, and then she's under the control of her husband. Boys are also under the control of their father up until a certain point. But I'm sorry, you want to say that?
No, why does it make a difference that she doesn't get married at the age of 12 from a halachic standpoint?
Because that's the topic of our perek. The na'ara hamiruasa, the engaged na'ara, is a certain period of time from the age of 12 to 12 and a half. This perek is dealing with that window of time.
What was the end?
Yes. So again, our perek deals with hafara. Hafara is batala. It's a canceling out of the neder by the father or by the husband under certain circumstances. So in the life of a girl, you have three periods. First, she's a ketana. First, she's a ketana, which means a minor, halachically. Like we have a katan, a kid before bar mitzvah. So a katana is a girl before bat mitzvah. So in other words, she's a katana, kol od she's, let's say for the sake of simplicity, because it's not centrally the topic of our Gemara, until she's 12 years and has brought forth simanei bagrut, that she's developed in a puberty type way, which is generally marked as Shtei Se'arot, just like it is for boys. I'm talking about pubic hairs. So until she's 12 years and has simanim, she's a ketana. From 12 to 12 and a half, she's what halacha calls a ne'ara. A ne'ara. Right? In other words, we might translate these as until she's 12, she's a child. From 12 to 12 and a half, she's a girl. The Halavai teenagers were only for a half a year. It'd be a different world. From 12 to 12 and a half, she's what we'd call a girl, or they would translate that as a maiden, but we don't use that term anymore, but we would call her a girl. And from 12 and a half, she's a bogeret, meaning she's a full woman lechol davar.
This distinction between 12 and 12 and a half, is it in the Torah itself? Is this,
So that's a question which we will get to, where these concepts come from. But a ne'ara from 12 years, from the time she becomes bat mitzvah, she is a bogeret lechol davar. She's an adult, meaning she's mechuyevet b'mitzvah, just like boys. As soon as boys become bar mitzvah, they're a godel lechol davar. They're mechuyev b'mitzvot the same as we are. They can be motzias in mitzvot, you know, the same way as anybody can be motzi in a mitzvah, right? They're a halachic adult for all purposes. Same with a girl is chayev in all mitzvot from bat mitzvah. She is susceptible to all of the onashim of somebody who does averot for all purposes from the time she becomes bat mitzvah. But in this half year period in between, she's still, for certain purposes, under what's called the reshut aviha. She is under the control of her father, who is zoche b'mase yodeha, that the work that she does is financially still belongs to him. She is not yet independent financially, and she cannot marry without his permission. Right? She can't, if she wants to get married, so the father, after that point, so it's nice to get your father's permission, particularly since you want him to pay for the wedding, but technically speaking, if a girl wants to go off and elope, she's allowed to do so. And also, for these purposes of the Torah, gives him this extra time on being able to be mefer her nidarim, to cancel out any nidarim, not any, certain nidarim, well, we'll see in a second, to cancel out her nidarim until she's 12 and a half. Lemaisa, it's not from 12 to 12 and a half for the purposes of nidarim. We say that a katan or a ktana are already in the parasha of Nidarim from a year before bar or bat mitzvah. That if a boy who's 12 or 12 and a bit, or a girl who's 11 or 11 and a bit, makes a neder and understands the consequences of his or her Nidarim and understands lemi hu noder or lemi hi noderet, like what it means to like make this kind of promise to go. Let me turn off my phone. So they are chayiv in their nedarim. This has halachic consequences for us, for other things. For certain things, normally we say you can't make a katan or a katana a shaliach for a dvar mitzvah. Like you can't, I mean, we don't, trying to think of practical examples of this. Like when we learned Kiddushin, we talked about being Makadesh al Yedei Shaliach, right? You give a ring or money to somebody, say, go off and there'll be Makadesh that woman for me. Now, it seems very strange to us. We never experienced such a thing, but halachically it would work. But you can't give a 9-year-old, you know, a ring and say, go run over to that girl and be Makadesh her for me, because a katan doesn't have that and can't function to create that shlich. Can't be an extension of my halachic will because they're not b'nei dat. But for certain things already from before bar or bat mitzvah. So the really practical case is it's Friday afternoon and you bought, I don't know, you bought all types of, you bought new a new spatula, a new whatever it is, you know, on Friday, because that's when errands get done, and you realize it's shortly before Shabbat, and you haven't toveled this item that you want to use on Shabbat. We always end up having to do all of our tefillas kelim on Friday, like at the last minute, because this is when these things get done. And so can't you can't you it's the minhag community, right? So you can't give a 6-year-old the kelim to go, even though all it is sticking it into the water. A kid knows how to put a glass into a bucket of water, right? But any kid that's old enough to put his dishes in the sink is old enough technically to do to execute the act of being tovel tefillat kelim, but you can't appoint them to be a shliach ledvar mitzvah. But a kid who is a year before bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah, you could, because at a certain point we say they already have, under normal circumstances, unless there's something, let's say, developmentally wrong, they already have enough da'at to get it done. No, so in other words, gil chinuch is, there's different gil chinuch for different things. But here, it's not merely chinuch. And as normally, when your kid eats a matzah, so you have an 8-year-old kid. So he eats an 8-year-old kid can eat a piece of matzah. So he's not eating matzah. He's doing the mitzvah, or this is a famous chiluk of Reb Chaim. But he's doing an act called chinuch lachilat matzah, even though it looks exactly the same as an adult eating a piece of matzah. This is why a child can't be motzi in things that kiddush, let's say, right? Why can't a child say, an 8-year-old can say kiddush, right? My 8-year-old loves to say kiddush, right? His siblings are not so crazy about the idea that we have to wait an additional amount of time while he says Kiddush, right, and fills up the wine to the tippy-tippy and spills the wine and says the Kiddush and gets the bencher and has to find the place in the bencher and doesn't want help to find the place in the bencher. The teenage siblings love spending that time on Friday night before they get to eat. But he loves to say Kiddush, so why can't he be motzi? Why can't he be motzi me? Because he can't say Kiddush. Ah, he says all the words. He says them very nicely. He can read very nicely. He knows how to hold a cup of wine and has a cup of grape juice in his hands. Because what he's saying is not Kiddush. What he's saying is Chinuch LeKiddush. But Reb Chaim is like a famous chiluk about...
He doesn't have a chiyuv of Kiddush either, then.
He doesn't have a chiyuv of Kiddush. He's a chiyuv of Chinuch. Yeah, right? Or you have a chiyuv to be mechanech him. This is the chiluk. Whether he has a chiyuv derabanan to do things for the purpose of Chinuch, or whether we, the parent, have an obligation to make sure that he does it. And there's a nafka mina here. The famous case that Reb Chaim gives is Birkat HaMazon. You could have a case where a katan has a greater obligation than a gadol for Birkat HaMazon. V'achalta v'savato v'erachta. You're only chayev d'oraisa to bench if you've eaten k'dei sova, if you've reached a certain level of being full. But if you have, you wash and you have one piece of toast, but you have to bench because you're leaving the house, you're still hungry. So you're chayv to bench only the rabbanon. But if your kid washed and had 5 pancakes and a waffle and a bowl of cereal, he's full up to the gills. So maybe he's chayiv on a higher level to bench than you are. So depending upon how we view what type of chiyuv he has, in theory, he could be motzi, you, the adult. But it depends on how we view the nature of his chiyuv. This is a famous chakira in the Reb Chaim.
Does Rav chiyuv like a mirror image of an adult's chiyuv? For instance, okay, yes, this is make Yiddish because of chinuch.
Right.
Okay, does that mean that he can't eat until he makes kiddush?
It's the same thing. In other words, whatever kind of obligation he has, all of the dinim from whatever age we would say a child reaches, you know, a 2-year-old is not chayiv in kiddush, right? And a 2-year-old doesn't have to wait to hear kiddush in order to eat. But at whatever point you say no, the child has to be educated to not eat before kiddush. If he's probably at the same point where he's chayef to hear kiddush, so then he shouldn't eat before he hears kiddush. So normally we say that a child, until the kid, this is the Mishnah in Sukkah, which we've learned a number of times. Mishnah in Sukkah: when is a kid obligated to take the lulav and esrog? How old do you have to be to take a lulav and ester? I mean, right. Well, and as a little kid, a 2-year-old, they sell these like lulav toys. A 2-year-old can whack a lulav around, a lulav and ester around. Then if you put the lulav in his right hand and the ester in his left hand, you know, he can do the mitzvah. And we know, you know, that Steve. We're careful. You take the esrog upside down, because if you just pick it up, you're yotzei the mitzvah. And once you yotzei the mitzvah, you can't say the bracha anymore. So we're careful. We pick up the esrog upside down, because when it's upside down, you can't fulfill the obligation. You say the bracha and then you turn it right side up. Steve's family, as is mentioned, Shulchan Aruch, they have this minhag where you just have kavana that you're not yotze, which works, but that's not the minhag. The minhag is you take it upside down. But what? What? That's the minhag Agora. So just
that's more problematic.
Just yeah, because it requires people to have kavana, and kavana is something that we know we mess up with a certain amount of frequency. No, in negative kavana. You say, I'm not being yotzei the mitzvah.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But then you want to turn it into positive kavana.
Yeah, the bracha indicates, when you say, Asher kedushanu b'mitzvah tavitzivanu al natilat lulav, that's a declaration of kavana. That's why Chazal made the brachot. The brachot are declarations of kavana. You're saying, Asher kedushanu b'mitzvah tavitzivanu, I am commanded, I'm doing a commandment, and here is the name of this command. That's a statement of kavana.
So what does it mean? Let's say before Tkiyat Shofar, the Gaboy says everybody should be mechaven to be yotze.
Because the Gaboyim like to say things.
That doesn't mean anything.
By definition, if you're aware that it's Rosh Hashanah and that this thing the guy on the bima is holding to his mouth is a shofar, more kavana than that you don't need. But we like to have lots of kavana. That reminds people. I'm the makri here. So I think, like, you know, the guy should just get up and say the brachos, and I should say tkia. But the gaboyim always say you have to make the announcements. Like the announcements. Is there anyone in the room who doesn't know that we're about to blow shofar? Is there anyone in the room who doesn't know? You know what? You really shouldn't talk. Right, but no. But we make those announcements. You shouldn't talk. You should wait until the end. Yeah. So, like, Gaboyim like to make announcements. So they, you know, like I get to Kia Shofar, right? The Corey will read the Megillah and be Motzias, and we should have command to be Motzias. That's what we're all here for. What do you think we're wearing these ridiculous costumes for? Right? What do you think? Like, why is everybody getting out of their house on a Wednesday night? So okay. So people like to make the announcements. So yeah. Where was I?
8:11.
Chinuch. We got off the track with the top of chinuch. So a little kid can take a lulav and do the minimum act of pulling it up. But the Mishnah says, at what age do you give a katan a lulav and esrog? From the time they can do the na'anu'im. You know, the shaking in the different directions, up. Right, how does Uncle Moshe go? Up, up, down, down, right, left, all around, here, there, everywhere, right? Until you can do, whether you do it like this shita, you do it like the Arizal, you do, right? So, but that, I don't understand. That is not essential to the mitzvah. If somebody doesn't do the na'anuim, if all they do is pick up the lulav and esrog, they're a yotze. Horaya, they can't say a broch if they picked it up with kavana to do the mitzvah. Once they've done it, because they've already been yotzei. So why do we say, forget? Because there's a minimum way to do the mitzvah, and then there's the proper way to do the mitzvah. So you don't educate a child to do the mitzvah until they can do it fully. Right? A 2-year-old could do the minimum act of doing the mitzvah, but they can't do it properly in the full sense. So until you can do something in the full sense, so you're not in the parasha being educated. The only exception to this is fasting on Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah says that we do fast for sure. Like little kids should be acclimated to fasting a couple hours. And then the next year...
Fasting you view as a positive mitzvah. Because very soon, you would... I mean, the difference would make. You don't like tell the kids that they can like... do a little bit of Kol Shabbat. It's not
right.
Like, so not eating food is not the same as not.
No, but the point is, like, in other words, you can't, a katan can't fast for 25 hours. So you could say, look, until they're ready to fast for 25 hours to do the whole mitzvah. So there's no point in fasting a little bit. There's no point in shaking the lulav a little bit if you can't do it the whole way, right? So that's an exception for various reasons, which we're not going to go into now. So that's the din by chinuch. By chinuch, you're mechanech kids when they can do the mitzvah kemoshe tzarich. There used to be this people used to, maybe still they get these chinuch, they used to call them chinuch sets for lulav and esrog. Meaning they would sell you a posel lulav and esrog to buy for your kid. So, look, you can understand, in the days when not every adult had a lulav and esrog because things were expensive and Jews didn't have so much money, so to buy lulav and esrog for no little kids had lulav and esrogim, right? Nobody before bar mitzvah had their own lulav and esrog. You used your father's. So they used to sell these chinuch sets, you know, which were the posel lulav and esrogs that were laying around. The mocher would sell them to you for cheap. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was opposed to this. He said, by definition, you can't be machanech a kid to do a mitzvah in a posel way. Right? It's.
But if the kid doesn't know,
it doesn't matter. In other words, chinuch means you show them how to do it in the proper way. Right? Right? Now, this is a halachic reality of what a lulav and what an esrog is. But if you give him a broomstick and a lemon,
all he needs to know is the directions of where he's shaking. He doesn't need
But in other words, it's from the point that from the point. Look, you can teach him. You can sit and learn the Mishnayos. You can show him pictures. You can, but if you want to be mechanechim to do the mitzvah, he can't go to shul and hold a posel lulav and esrog during the halel and think that he's doing the mitzvah, or think that he's learning how to do the mitzvah. Right? You can't learn how to do the mitzvah like you wouldn't. You wouldn't. You wouldn't. I don't know. You couldn't give a kid. This is an Avera, but just like we wouldn't give a kid a piece of chametz and Leila Seder, it's very expensive to have matzah. So
you could say, it doesn't have to be an Avera. It could be, you say you wouldn't give him a kosher Pesach cracker.
But in other words, you can only be mechanechim in the way of the proper mitzvah. If he's not yet ready for that, so then he's not yet ready for that. Nowadays, I've said this many times, I think that nowadays lulav and esrogim are not as expensive as they used to be. And Baruch Hashem, we all have much more money than Jews used to have. And some people are in the parasha of grandparenting. But if when your kids, I always told my kids, if you are prepared to come to shul every day of Chol HaMoed, I don't mean just on the first day Yontif, if you're going to come to shul every day of Chol HaMoed, you know, I will buy you your own lulav and esrog. You don't have to buy mohud or aleph, aleph, aleph. You can buy the cheapest kosher set, which is not that much money. If a kid's not going to come to, if a six-year-old's not going to come to shul every morning of Chol HaMoed, he doesn't need his own lulav. He'll take your lulav when you come home from shul. But if you're going to come to shul every day of Chol HaMoed, so I'll buy you your own lulav and esrog. That's proper chinuch from the time that they're first grade, second grade. Even my daughter always, there was like a certain amount of kino amongst them, right? So even my daughter would come to shul during Chol HaMoed if I bought her on lulav and esrog, and I think it's a proper thing to do. Anyway, we've gotten off the track because we were talking about the din of a child's nedarim from before bar bat mitzvah. So this parasha that we're talking about is from the age of 12 to 12 and a half, the na'ara hamiurasa, because na'arut is from 12 to 12 and a half, but in reality it's already from beforehand because the nedarim of a katan or a katana about a year before bar mitzvah already have halachic reality.
So the father do have for at age 11 already.
So a father or the Baal, once she's married, can be mefer the nadarim. But if the father or the Baal, if the father when she's, forget this middle period, if when she's a single girl, the father, or if when she's married, the husband are mekayem the neder if they indicate their stamp of approval. She takes a neder, and he says, neder ze kayam. Or if he says, yashakach, that's a nice idea. So then, having given his stamp of approval, he can't then be mefer, the neder, afterwards. So in this case of the na'araha mi'urasa milashon erusin, meaning kiddushin, a girl who is 12 years old accepts kesef kiddushin from the Baal. Now here there's a technical lashon point for the Baal lashon. The Mishnah and the Gemara generally use the term Baal, meaning husband. It's not so PC anymore. What's the contemporary phrase? Ben Zugi.
Ishi.
Right?
Mistaken understanding of the meaning of Baal.
It's a mistaken understanding, except you will admit that language evolves and takes on meanings and part of the patriarchal oppression.
No, don't say it means ownership.
Yes.
The owner is not the Baal. The owner is the Baal, is the Baalim.
Baalim, yes.
Significant.
Yes, yes. But explain that to the people that are oppressed by this.
We're hopeless for that.
Yes. But in all cases, he is not the Baal. Whatever Baal means. He is the Arus. He is the, what we call in English, the fiancé, although he's more than the fiancé after Kiddushin. So it is technically speaking, and she's the Arusa, and he is the Arus, the betrothed. But the Mishnah and the Gemara very often use the term Baal even in this intermediate period. After Nisuin, which is... What Nisuin exactly is a topic of discussion when you learn Masechet Kiddushin. I think we touched on it way back when. Kiddushin, we know what it is. Hayat mikudeshet libeta batzu, or with this money, or with this shtar. But Nisuin is a little more amorphous. Either it's the chuppah, when they stand under the chuppah, even though we do the Kiddushin also under the chuppah, or it's the act of like going and living together in a home. But at that point, whatever the nisuin is, that's the moment where she leaves her father's authority completely. And even if she is still a na'ara or a ktana, she now becomes fully underneath the husband. And if she gets divorced or is widowed at that point, she never goes back to the father. She doesn't go back to the father at that point. Right? Even though she's still less than 12 and a half years old. She doesn't now, in terms for the purposes of Nedarim, she doesn't go back to being under the control of her father. The Torah says biyom shamo, you see pasuk chet, v'shama isha biyom shamo, v'hecherishla v'kamu nidareha v'esareha asher asra al nafsha. On the day that the father or the husband hear about the neder, they have this veto power, this hafara power. But it's not forever. It has to be on the day that they hear about it. Now, maybe the day they hear about it is not the day that she took the neder. But on the day that they become aware that she's taken a neder, on that day they have the right to make the veto. According to most poskim, according to most rishonim, it's until the end of that day, meaning until shkia. So it could be they find out about it a minute before shkia, and the deadline is fast approaching. And if they don't get the veto in before the deadline, then it's stuck. According to other Rishonim, it's Biyom Shamo means the clock starts ticking. You have 24 hours from the moment that you hear about it. But the way we paskin is that it's until the end of the day. Right. In the case that I mentioned earlier, they have Kiddushin, and then the wedding gets called off. So at that point, they have Kiddushin, but not Nisuin. She's in the intermediate stage of being a Na'ara, between 12 and 12 and a half. They have Kiddushin, the wedding gets called off, the husband drops dead, they get divorced. So in that case, she goes back to being in the Reshut of her father until 12 and a half. But if they've had Nisuin and she becomes widowed or divorced, even if she's not yet 12 and a half, she does not go back to her father. Until now, in the last parak, we were talking about Hatarat Nedarim, with a Petach or with Charata, right? In other words, you find some kind of excuse that the Chachamim can say, oh, well, had you known this, you wouldn't have done that. Or if you explain sufficient regret or remorse for having made the neder, so then you can get hatarat nedarim, and then the neder is cancelled retroactively. When the Beis Din gives you hatarat nedarim, it means it's like it never existed. I think the Ritva says that's the lashon of hatara, like matir. Like you have a knot. There's a rope with a knot in it. You untie the knot. It's like it was never there. There's no sign that it ever existed. That means that if somebody takes a neder and they violate the neder, and then they get hatarat nedarim, so retroactively they're not chayiv for all of the violated nedarim along the way, for whatever they got hatara for. In other words, if you take a neder and you violate the neder, what's the punishment?
Malkot.
So you take a neder and then you don't stand by it. Take a neder, I won't drink wine. And then you drink wine. And you say, oh, look, I can't do this. You give up coffee. You say, oh, yeah, I can't do this. So you go to Beis Din, you get hataras nedarim. But P.S., you were already over on the Isser of not standing by your neder. So technically speaking, you are Chayav Malkot for that. But the Hatarat Nedarim clears your slate. However, Hafarat Nedarim of the father or of the husband is not retroactive. It's only from that moment on. So if in the morning she takes a neder, and already she can't stand by the neder, you know, during that day, and the father or the husband, before the end of the day, are mefer the neder, right? They say, neder zemufer, it's cancelled. You don't have to go to Beis Din, right? Beis Din's not involved in hafarat nedarim. But she violated the neder, so she's chayiv malkot for the neder that she violated. Finally, the husband has the right to be mayfair. This is a husband even when she's an adult, when she's 30, 40, 50 years old, not just when she's between 12 and 12 and a half. The husband can be mayfair nidarim that either have an element of inui nefesh, she took a kind of neder that's like a kind of oppression. She gives up eating meat. She gives up who knows what. Or she takes a neder that directly bears on their relationship. Not just their, shall we say, not just their intimate relationship, but on anything that's going to make, you know, living together as husband and wife difficult. She takes a neder, she's not going to brush her teeth. Right? So that, you know, you're all happily married, but you understand what kind of impact that might have on a relationship. you know, the wife takes an edit. She's not going to brush her teeth. So it's reasonable that he has a say in that matter. But on other things that are not matters of inui nefesh, and they're not matters that directly relate to their, to the intimate, although not only sexual, nature of their relationship, the husband doesn't have carte blanche to cancel. So if a woman...
Who intervenes, though?
What do you mean?
I mean,
how
does it work? Like, she makes an editor, and he decides, and it's...
No, so you so got... No,
like,
you
he
got,
convinces
you
it's got, not, so...
So, so obviously, you can imagine that that would be a topic that the Gemara would try to delineate what is and isn't considered.
No, but he has to view himself as the person to decide what he can and can't do. I mean, it's kind of weird. I mean, maybe just today's reality.
No, so there's certain things. There are certain things that should be obvious. Right, there's certain things that should be obvious that that it's beino levina. She takes a neder. She's not gonna. She's only gonna shower once every 6 months. So okay, I mean that's obvious that that's something that's within his purview. She takes a neder that she's gonna say. It's all I've said is a min of, you know, many women say tilim. You go on any bus in Yerushalayim any day of the week, you can see these old ladies saying tilim, right? So it's a praiseworthy custom. So she takes an ed there. I'm gonna get on the tilim bandwagon. I'm gonna say whether it's the yom or it's the, you know, there's different cycles. Today you finish all 150 kapitlach every week or every month or, right? So she takes an ed that she's gonna become a tilim zoger. It's not clear to me that that's there's no inui nefesh there. She's not becoming ascetic and giving up wine or coffee or meat or who knows what. And it doesn't impact, you know, on their beino levena. He wouldn't have a right to be made for that neder. If he tried to be made for that neder, he doesn't have that authority, right? So it's not carte blanche. It's on specific areas of nedarim that he can now. I don't know. You can. I'm making up this scenario, but you could say, "Look, my wife. She doesn't take care of the kids, and she doesn't get my dinner ready. And Edith, where's my beer? Because she's so busy, she always has her nose in the tilim." So you can go to the chachamim, and you can say, "This is a matter of beno levena. She's neglecting her other responsibilities." I don't know. I don't know what the lamaisa would be in that case, but on the face of things, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be something that he has a say in. The father, however, is a machlokas. Some poskim say the father has those same limitations that a husband has, meaning anything that's an inui nefesh. She says, "I'm gonna, you know, your daughter." Listen, everybody went through this with their kid at some point. Every one of my kids at some point has announced they want to be a vegetarian. Right? You know, there's always that moment where they realize that. That chicken is chicken, right? You know, there's that point where like the nofela simon, they realize that what they're eating is actually, you know. So you know, my daughter says, "I want to be a vegetarian." She wants to be a vegetarian, but she still wants to be able to eat hot dogs and hamburgers, right? Because a hot dog and a hamburger doesn't look like the cow.
My daughter said she would not eat
Of bitzura, right? There's a. There's a Calvin and Hobbes, which actually, like, you know, came true in our house. My kid's eating, you know, fish sticks, which Bechal doesn't look like anything. It's not. I mean, it's completely processed. But he's eating fish sticks. So he says to my wife, "Fish sticks? It's made out of chicken?" So you tell your kid. So, like, you don't want your kid to be a vegetarian for whatever reason. You know, because if you're not vegetarians, it's very difficult to run a house with little kids who are. Or because it's not, you know, in some ways it's not so healthy for kids to be vegetarians because they need protein and other things. And anyway, whatever it is. So a father has a right to like control the inui nefesh of his children. And while a father and a child don't have the same kind of intimate connection that husband and wife do, but yet there are things that do relate to their relationship. Somebody could take a neder that would involve financial expenses, right? The child does not have the right to manage their own finances in that way. A father has a right to, or a parent has a right to put a veto on that. Although for the purposes of nedarim, it's assigned to the father. The Rambam, however, thinks that no. that the father's power to be mefer neder is greater than that of a husband. Right, that a father has carte blanche to any kind of neder on his kid, because a father has responsibility, you know, more global responsibilities for chinuch that a husband doesn't have.
The father can be mefer the dream of his. But his minor sons as well, or only, minor
only minor daughter, and his minor daughters in this way, yeah.
Because before that, they don't have any. Before 11, you're saying, or
right,
12,
right.
They don't have. There's no. There's nothing.
It's not nedarim. It's not.
Yeah, after that, it doesn't. So the only thing is talking about is this window. So for some, there's no window at all.
Right, right.
Even according to the chinuch aspect, there's still no window because it's not.
Right, right. Which is why when your kid gets older, you have to be mechanech them about nedarim, and not just like, I mean, we don't have nedarim anymore because we blee neder everything, we just zap it all with one big blee neder, but as we pointed out, nedarim are, you know, a serious matter, and people should be careful to, even if in effect we don't use nedarim in the same way, but people should be educated to know the consequences of making promises and the what it means to give your word, and also the the examples that I gave when we started of praiseworthy practices which have the force of nedarim. I gave the example of my kid wanting to wear a gartel and things like that. Halavai, those should be our biggest problems. But
is there any explanation given as to why you have this, like the reason, the advantage of having this window for girls? I mean,
yes. So I will come back to that in due course. Let's look at the Mishnah in the 5 minutes we have. So it's the bottom line on Samach Vav Amud Beis. Na'arah Hamurasa. An engaged girl between the age of 12 and 12 and a half. Aviha Ba'ala Mefirim Nidareha. The father and the husband have the right to be mefer. What's the best translation for mefer?
To annul.
Not annul. Annul would be hatarat nedarim. Annul is like, you know, like, you know, you, like you were never married. To release her from her vows.
Oh, I'd say
is the point here of the annul? In other words, hafarat nedarim is only mikanu lahaba. It's not retroactive.
How does your
Disallow? But to cancel the nedarim. Hefer ha'av velo hefer ha'bal. Hefer ha'bal velo hefer ha'av. If the father was mefer, but the husband wasn't, or vice versa, eno mufar. Meaning, it's, you know, it's like the nuclear launcher. You have to have two people, and they each have to have their own key. No one person can launch the bomb on his own, and that's there as a safety measure. Ve'ein tzarech lomar shekiyem echad mehem. And, you know, and kavachomer, if one of them was mekayem. Because remember what I said, if the father or the husband are mekayem the neder, she takes a neder and he says, neder zekayam, or yashikoyach, that's a good praiseworthy neder to take. So once they put their stempel on it,
what's the nafkamina about the Baal? The father is mefer and the Baal doesn't say anything. Or the Baal is Mekayem. I can see.
Would you imagine that this, I mean, obviously you prepare in advance. You go over the Gemara that we're about to learn.
Okay, we didn't talk about that.
No, between last Tuesday and tonight, you learned ahead.
No.
Well, let's assume that you did. Okay. Wouldn't you assume that this is exactly the question that the Gemara is going to ask?
Okay. I mean, I assume regardless of this weird window period, but you have until the end of that day where there's 24 hours.
Shalom, I was joking with you.
Where you have at the end of that day, whether 24 hours or the end of the that day, to be mefer the neder. But if I imagine, if you, once you're mekayem the neder, then well, you can't go. You can't the day is over. Back. That's done. So like right. once either party is Mahim, then you can't like if once I didn't do anything, you still might be able to say something. But here saying. And so once one side is Mekayim, then there's no...
Right, so there are three parts. There are three parts to the Mishnah. Part A, the father and the husband have the right to be Mefer, the neder of a Nara Murasa. Number two, they both need to do it. The father without the husband, or the husband without the father, is gornished. And number three... Kavachomer, not only do you need both of them to be made fair, but if one of them was Mekayim, what is Mekayim? Mekayim's the nuclear option. Once you've been Mekayim, you can't be made fair. Right? Even, obviously, we're all talking within the same day. But once one of them has been Mekayim, that's the nuclear option, and Hafarat Nedarim of this Nara Meusa is now off the table, because one of them has rendered themselves unable to be Mayfair through their hakama. So the Gemara will now obviously ask, what do you need all of these parts? In part A, in the Reisha, I told you, you need the father and the husband. So in part B, what do I need to tell you? The father without the husband, or the husband without the father, is gornished. I already told you, you need the father and the husband. So that's what the Gemara asks. Hainu Reisha. That's exact, it's precise, it's repetitive.
What if I give you an example. What if the father dies in between?
What if the father dies in between? Okay, so these are all the questions the Gemara will ask. Yeah, but the very first question of the Gemara is the Havamina of the redundancy here. Anyways, we'll get into that next week.